Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Battle Plan by T.R. Harris, narrated by Perry Daniels. Chapter 1. "We do not get many humans here," said the warden. "We have had a few, yet none currently." He grinned. "It is understandable why you have been sent here." The alien reached down to a data pad and made an entry. "Your prisoner designation will be NT-4. You are no longer who you once were. From now on, you belong to the Panorius Confinement Center number 8. "I don't even know why I'm here," said the human, holding up his shackled arms for effect. "There was no trial, no nothing. I was just scooped up and brought here."
"I might be able to enlighten you as to the reason."
The warden scanned his pad again.
"Let me see. The human known as Copernicus Smith has been accused of assisting the Zanies cartel in their activities."
"I'm not a member of the cartel. I just repair starships."
"Yes, you do. However, for the criminal element, allowing their crews to commit unspeakable acts of cruelty and mayhem, or the ability to transport contraband throughout this part of the galaxy, in the eyes of some, that is seen as aiding in their activities."
"I was just doing the job I was hired to do. I don't care who they are, so long as they pay."
"Even if they are criminals?"
Copernicus shifted nervously in his seat. "I normally don't ask who they are. But that's not the point. I haven't been able to defend myself, to give my side of the story."
The warden nodded. "That is true, however irrelevant. In some jurisdictions within the expansion, local governments, business entities, and certain individuals with power and influence are allowed to sponsor prisoners in our facilities. Your particular benefactor has chosen to finance your stay with us."
"Benefactor? You call someone who snatches you off the street and throws you in jail a benefactor?"
"They are paying."
"And I don't have any recourse. Anyone I can call?"
"Not at the moment," said the warden. "Your first opportunity to do so will be in 50 days.
50 days? You mean I'm stuck here all that time?" The alien wasn't upset with Coop's constant interruptions. In fact, he was enjoying it. Copernicus was sure the fat alien had heard the same protests 1,000 times before, and still he reveled in the fear and frustration his victims displayed.
"From my experience, I would say you will be with us for much longer than that. Allow me to explain the procedures we have in place here at Panorius Number 8.
Earlier, the warden had introduced himself as Grandier Danziff, and now the fat, pale-skinned alien leaned back in his chair and studied the human for several moments before speaking again.
"The organization I work for maintains several such detention centers throughout the galaxy, each specializing in a particular type of inmate. Number 8 is reserved for the strongest and most dangerous of species, hence your presence here. As you can tell, you are on a moon with gravity 1/3 that of Jurian standard. The location was chosen deliberately, designed to counteract any advantages you, and others like you, may have with regard to strength or other physical abilities. As you know, prolonged exposure to such low gravity produces deleterious effects within a body, and the longer you remain, the more severe these effects. To foster such reduction in the natural abilities of our guests, all are placed within a conditioning chamber for the first 200 days of your incarceration. During that time, you will slowly lose much of your strength, stamina, and your will to resist. If you survive the conditioning period, you will be released into the labyrinth below ground. There you may choose any unoccupied side cave as your own and live out a more or less normal life. You will be allowed to work in the various shops and factories Penorius runs, under contract with certain outside entities, and for this you will be paid a small wage. There are shops and eating facilities run by inmates which you may use. Once you reach this stage, you will find that there is very little crime underground, as the inmates are often too weak to commit any. The warden grinned, instinctively keeping his teeth from showing fully, a gesture signifying a death challenge in most alien cultures. Every 50 days you will be brought before the review board to have your sentence updated. It is then that your benefactor may choose to pardon you. However, none of the inmates know the true length of their imprisonment. That will depend on those paying for the confinement. At any of these review sessions you could be set free, meaning your time with us could be as little as 50 days or as long as a lifetime. You will never know the duration. But I must warn you, Copernicus Smith, that since all benefactors pay in advance for the 200-day conditioning stage, pardons seldom occur during this period. It is only after being conditioned and moved below ground that most pardons occur, since Penorius still charges a fee for your confinement. Even though the fee is significantly lower than the first 200 days, since we are compensated by your labor, many benefactors do not see the need for continual funding. However, if you are pardoned after a fair amount of time on the moon, your body will undoubtedly have trouble acclimating to normal gravity, and very few of our former inmates have the resources for a more regimented reintroduction. Instead, many choose to forfeit their labor pay so they can remain in the catacombs. But death comes sooner in the moon's gravity, even under the best of conditions. And one additional warning. The staff and guards are not subject to the damaging effects of the moon's gravity. After each shift, we return to the orbiting space station, where we experience the healing effects of standard gravity. This means the guards and staff are much stronger and more durable than any of the inmates, even humans, at least after the initial conditioning phase. This serves as an additional deterrent to violence or escape attempts. Until you are released below ground, you will have to fend for yourself in the conditioning chamber. There you will meet creatures with a variety of latent abilities such as yours. You may survive, you may not. That is not our concern, since Penorius survives on our initial payments and labor exchange. If an altercation does occur between inmates, we will make a determination whether or not the injured party or parties are worth repairing. If so, they will be taken to the medical ward. If not, then they will be left to die. In the view of Penorius, it is preferable for an inmate to die early within the conditioning stage, since it will be less expensive than servicing a live guest going forward. Therefore, as a general rule, the guards will not interfere. For your first 200 days at Penorius, it will be survival of the fittest. Following that, it will just be survival. This time, the alien smiled fully, displaying double rows of small, rounded teeth, unafraid of the sensibilities of his new guest. That is why I have confidence you will be with us for a very long time, since humans have a tendency to persevere. I welcome that. It will only prolong your misery. Now, NT-4, welcome to the Penorius Confinement Center number 8. Copernicus Smith was taken from the administration building through a long, transparent tube that disappeared into a rock wall ahead. Along the way, he looked out on the monochrome grayness of the moon and its airless terrain. The prison was set within a small crater, bordered by hills several hundred feet high. In the distance was the landing field, and next to it was another large building with cables and huge ducts running into the side of the crater wall, the life support center for the facility. Long shadows cut across the base of the crater, created by the nearby planet or star around which the moon orbited. Coop then noticed a bright object in the blackness of space above. That would be the space station where the guards and staff would return after each shift. He made a note of its location, undoubtedly geosynchronous. That was good to know. He wouldn't have to go looking for it if and when the time came. As he walked, he counted his steps. Although his situation appeared hopeless at the moment, it was in Coop's nature to always be looking for a way out. After all, he didn't come to the Penorious Confinement Center to be a prisoner. At least, not for long. The conditioning chamber was a rather large, elongated cavern, with relatively few occupants, maybe a couple of dozen or so, at least the ones he could see. The right side of the chamber was divided up into dozens of cubicles made of 8-foot-high concrete partitions. To the left was a dining area with freestanding tables and chairs, a lounge area with monitors mounted on the stone wall, and what appeared to be a grooming station off in the distance. There were no cooking facilities nor food processors along the wall, meaning the meals had to be brought in from someplace else. Again, that was good information to know. Copernicus was dressed in a standard tan tunic, too large for his short human body. Most aliens were taller than humans, and the management of the facility didn't see the need to have a variety of uniform sizes available for the prisoners. His shackles were removed, and he was handed a bedroll made of 3-inch-thick foam rubber and held tight by magnetic bands. A small pouch containing basic grooming tools completed the ensemble. Two grubby-looking inmates spotted him immediately and sauntered over, towering over the smaller human by a foot or more. They showed no fear of the guard and instead moved closer to block Coop's way.
"Fresh meat," said a yellow-skinned alien with a row of tiny horns projecting from his bony forehead.
"Yes," said his slightly shorter companion, a gray-skinned creature of a different species. "And fresh meat need no sleeping pad."
He reached out and grabbed Coop's bedroll. The human held on, not letting it go. "I believe I need this," Coop said with a grin, "and I'll be keeping it."
"This is a human," Hornhead said. "I've seen them on the broadcasts. This must be one of the smaller varieties, a runt. Give us the pad."
Copernicus had his fist hidden under the bedroll, and when the smaller alien made another grab for it, Coop lashed out with the speed and force humans were known for, yet had to constantly demonstrate to a slow-learning galaxy. He caught the alien under the chin and drove splintered bone into his pea-sized brain. Without so much as a grunt, the creature's eyes turned pale gray, and the alien timbered to the stone floor like a fallen tree, stiff and rigid and dead on arrival. Hornhead staggered back, having not seen the hit that killed his companion. Coop turned to face him, a thin grin on his face, ready for round two. But the alien wasn't biting. He attempted a look of defiance that fell flat before he turned and walked away, leaving his friend lying where he fell. Coop looked up at the towering, silent guard and grinned. "You're welcome," he said. "Just doing my part to help Penoria save money on inmate upkeep." After the guard left, Copernicus checked the pouch to see if anything inside could be fashioned into a weapon. To his surprise, he found a scrub brush with a plastic handle that could be made into a decent shiv. The warden didn't care if the inmates killed each other. In fact, he encouraged it, at least for the first 200 days.
After that, Copernicus conceded he would probably be too weak to start a fight with any of the inmates. He'd been around the galaxy long enough to know how fast muscles atrophied in weak gravity, knowledge which instilled a sense of urgency in Coop's planning. The other item in the pouch was a washcloth. He looked around the room and spotted a row of small holes on the floor off to his left, next to the lounge area. Steady streams of water flowed from pipes in the wall and traveled along channels in the floor before disappearing into the holes. A few inmates were in the area. Some squatted over the holes, while others used the recycled water to bathe themselves with the washcloths. Then one of the aliens at the holes stood up and used his cloth to wipe himself. Copernicus looked at his cloth. It smelled clean, but it wasn't new, and now it would have to serve dual purposes, which made his stomach turn. After his initial initiation, the other inmates paid him little attention. If any of the others recognized him as a human, they didn't let on. Most were taller and stockier than he, with intense eyes, marking them as predator species. They were all predators, just as was Copernicus. And it was in the conditioning chamber where the inmates retained much of their natural and dangerous abilities. Coop wasn't worried. Not much. He knew there were other species in the galaxy stronger, quicker, and tougher than humans, but none combined these traits into a single creature that could legitimately stand against a human. Even so, size and a healthy dose of armor-like skin and bone could go a long way in negating a human's natural advantage, and from the look of the aliens in the large cavern, some could do just that. Copernicus walked past the dining area as he began the initial survey of his prison. Several aliens were sitting about, although there was no food or drink on the tables. He would learn the feeding schedule soon enough. He hoped it wouldn't be a free-for-all. He noticed 5 black-skinned creatures huddled together. They noticed him and stopped talking as he walked by, watching him with unblinking eyes. Coop recognized them as Gracilians, and as far as he could tell, their race was represented more than any other in the facility. Either that or they tended to cluster together more. He knew Gracilians quite well, having worked for them for a while several years ago. Although they were muscular and imposing creatures, they were known more for their intelligence than physical abilities. Yet still, they were at Penorius Number 8. He wondered what they'd done to be put here. Then he shrugged, realizing they could have done nothing at all, just like him. He moved on, walking the perimeter of the chamber, checking for air ducts, doorways, cameras, and guard stations. Only a few guards walked nonchalantly throughout the huge room, showing no fear or even concern for what was going on. He spotted 2 short-term fights take place while the guards stood by, appearing amused and talking amongst themselves as if betting on the outcome. At the far end of the cavern, he came upon a double security door. There were windows in the panels, and he gazed through. The tunnel beyond was more dimly lit and angled down at a decent slope. 2 aliens were visible, each wearing dilapidated clothing and shuffling along with slow, defeated cadence. Their bodies were emaciated, their faces sallow, eyes vacant. These would be some of the long-term tenants, living their more or less normal lives, as the warden called it. Coop couldn't see how they would have the strength to work the factories to earn any extra cash. He snickered when he realized these 2 depressing creatures could end up as a future meal, part of the Penorius Luxury Resort and Spa Recycling Program. He bet they would taste just like chicken. Copernicus moved on, now gazing into various cubicles, looking for one that was unoccupied. There were several, but he continued to make his rounds until he came to one with an inviting stack of 3 foam pads on the floor, with a 4th coiled up as a pillow. There was no one in the room, so he stepped inside and sat down on the bed. It was remarkably soft and comfortable, prompting him to recline fully with his head on the foam pillow. He closed his eyes and let out a deep sigh.
"I could get used to this,"
he said aloud. It had been a while since he had had decent sleeping accommodations. Something cast a shadow over him, and when he opened his eyes, all he could see was a dark object looming above him, taking up much of the small space in the cubicle with its bulk.
"This mine,"
said a baritone voice, as if spoken through a mouthful of rocks. As the figure shifted position, more light was allowed in, and Copernicus saw that the mouth was more like the scoop of a heavy equipment front loader than anything that should be on a living being. Then he got a better look at the monster hovering over him. It was indeed a monster, easily 10 feet tall and 4 feet wide, and looking like an oversized version of the Incredible Hulk, if that was even possible. Coop had seen a lot of aliens in his day, but this was a first. Everything about the beast was big and thick. Even his fierce yellow eyes were the size of drink coasters.
"This mine,"
the creature repeated. Coop slipped off the pad and stood up, confirming the size of the beast when his head only came to mid-torso on the monster. The alien was bare-chested, suffering from the same limitation in available prisoner tunics as did Coop, just in the opposite direction. The beast's arms were 5 feet long, made of a strange combination of 3 thick stalks, each 4 inches in diameter, and wrapped in a tight layer of blackish-brown skin, showing the underlying bone structure, and with discolored plates of even thicker skin creating an ugly mottled effect. Each arm was twice as thick as Coop's thigh.
"Sorry,"
Copernicus said as he gingerly squeezed past the huge beast and into the open space between the cubicles and the dining area. The creature slowly turned his enormous body to face the human.
"This mine,"
the creature said for the third time.
"He may be as big as a mountain," Coop thought, "but he's also dumber than a pile of rocks."
The human watched as the beast clenched his fists, forming them in square hammers, each 2 feet in diameter. They resembled Thor's hammer, only made of flesh and attached to 5-foot-long pendulums.
"I said I was sorry. Your bed looked so inviting, I had to try it out."
The fiery yellow eyes blazed down at him. Coop wasn't sure he could talk his way out of this one. Copernicus then noticed a small crowd of inmates was gathering, anticipating a show, something to distract them from their mind-numbing boredom. They stood back at a safe distance, each displaying looks of almost sadistic glee. This was a violent bunch, and they reveled in its many forms, whether giving or receiving. They were anxious to see the towering beast wreak havoc on the much smaller, pink-skinned alien. It was at that point that Coop remembered an old saying, one whose origin he was sure was from an old movie he'd seen once. It went something like, "The first day in prison, find the biggest opponent, and then kick his ass. It will send a message to the others." Even though the logic was undeniable, the reality of the strategy was another matter. And looking up at the 10-foot-tall wall of muscle, Copernicus was about to disregard the advice and make a strategic, if undignified, exit, when he remembered he was a human, and humans had a reputation to live up to.
"You know what?" he said to the alien mountain in front of him. "I've changed my mind. I'm not sorry. In fact, I rather like your 3-pad mattress. I think I'll keep it. From now on..." Coop pointed past the alien and into the cubicle. "This mine."
Chapter 2. The movement from the alien was like the parting of the Red Sea, as the long arms lifted to his sides before the hammer-like fists came sweeping back in toward the tiny human,
designed to catch him in a bone-crushing vice. The giant fists slammed together, just as Copernicus darted inside the arc of the limbs, able to easily avoid the slow-moving creature. Earlier, he'd watched the alien as he turned around. This creature was from a heavy-gravity world, just as were humans. However, this beast evolved differently. Rather than conquering its environment to become strong, swift, and coordinated, this mottled-skinned species surrendered to the oppressive gravity. They grew strong to counteract its effects. However, in the end, evolution chose sloth over speed, power over agility. Copernicus moved to the belly of the beast and began pummeling the alien with powerful blows to the side of the torso, where most creatures were vulnerable. To his disappointment, his hits had very little effect on the huge body, and the coarse, blotchy skin was like striking a thin layer of crusty armor. He was still trying to make a dent in the alien when one of the pendulum arms whacked him from the side. Even as he was flying through the air in the moon's light gravity, Copernicus realized the gravity here was both a boom and a bust. It was a bust because it would eventually kill him as his body slowly withered away. It was a boom because it allowed his body to be flung to the side without much effort, diminishing the impact of the blow and saving him from any lasting damage. He landed and skidded along the floor for several feet, crashing into the dining tables and chairs before coming to a rest. The mountain-sized beast followed, as evidenced by the vibrations in the stone floor. Fortunately, Coop had been thrown far enough away to give him time to scramble to his feet before the alien was upon him. The monster tried the clashing fists maneuver again, and again the human dodged them. Then Copernicus took a chair in his hands and scurried behind the lumbering beast, smashing it into the creature's back. All it did was shatter the plastic chair, leaving Coop clutching a 2-foot-long piece of plastic from one of the legs. It tapered to a sharp edge, forming a crude spear. As the beast turned, twisting in what was slow motion to the human, Copernicus shoved the sharp piece of plastic into the leg of the alien, just below the knee, and angled up. At that point, another saying came to mind. This one from another old movie he'd seen as a child on Earth. Take out the knees and the fight is over. Or something to that effect. Seeing that advice from one old movie got him into this mess in the first place, maybe another would save him. The beast bellowed in pain, swiping once again with a pendulum fist, striking the human on his right side. Copernicus lost his grip on the plastic spear as he was once again soaring through the air. This time, however, he smashed into one of the concrete partitions forming a cubicle. The wall crumbled, burying him in heavy chunks of sharp and dusty debris. The wounded beast hobbled toward him, the wall having stopped Coop's flight, leaving him only a few feet from the angry hulk. Coop's hand fell upon a sharp piece of the wall, a chunk that barely fit his hand and with a razor-sharp edge to it. As his opponent stepped closer, a giant, shoeless foot appeared. There were no shoes large enough to fit the alien at the facility, and that was to be his downfall. Copernicus lifted the piece of broken concrete and brought it down on the alien's big toe. Big was an understatement. The thing was as big as Coop's head. The cut was deep and wide, eliciting another painful cry from the alien. Before the lumbering beast could react, the human struck again and again, until the appendage was nearly severed, held on to the foot by a few ragged pieces of sinew. The beast stumbled backward to the floor, blood squirting out of the wound. The alien's hands uncoiled and reached down, grasping the foot, placing a basketball-sized palm over the cut to stop the bleeding. It didn't help. That's when another of the inmates got too close. The injured creature reached out and took the other alien in one of his hands, while the other ripped off his tunic. The monster then pressed the cloth into the wound, leaving the much smaller inmate naked and scrambling away, embarrassed. Copernicus climbed out of the pile of debris and dusted himself off. He looked around the room at the stunned and silent faces of the unbelieving.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?